RTL Original Podcast.
Welcome back to another season of DNA Luxembourg Crime Podcast. In today's episode, when innocent children and their carers become the victims of a terrifying 28-hour ordeal that puts the gentle border town of Wasserbillig on the front page of the New York Times and The Guardian, sparking an investigation into Luxembourg's controversial policing tactics. The attacker, a deeply troubled man with his own broken family history, taking 43 children and 5 educators captive as revenge. This is episode 1, Terror at Playtime. It's a lovely, quiet, sunny Wednesday morning on the 31st of May 2000 in the peaceful riverside town of Wasserbillig, nestled among sloping vineyards of the Moselle Valley. It's a bank holiday and a great entertainment program is set to take place this afternoon. A circus is coming to town, promising family fun and entertainment for the children. Picnickers are sitting on the banks of the Moselle River, sunbathing, enjoying their day off. But even on bank holidays, some adults have to work, bringing their children to the local creche or the daycare center. But this just another day is set to transform into an unfolding drama, etched in memory forever. By the afternoon, Wasserbillig was suddenly at the center of attention. Special police forces, emergency vehicles, and satellite television vans piled up in the town. A police helicopter hovered above the center as hundreds of journalists and members of the public from Luxembourg and abroad gathered around one building. At 3:35 p.m. that afternoon, a 39-year-old gunman carrying a pistol, a knife, a petrol tank, and a hand grenade entered the local Spatzennacht creche. He locked up the building with 5 teachers and 43 children inside, the latter aged between 2 and 10 years old and of Luxembourgish, Portuguese, German, and French nationality. A hostage taking of children at a daycare center was an unprecedented event in Luxembourg, and with especially many young children's lives in danger, law enforcement were quick to respond to the scene. With information still unclear as to how the kidnapping was unfolding, who the attacker was, officials set up an operations and reception base nearby at the local cultural center. Given the location of events on the border, Luxembourg police were also supported by German authorities, headed by the State Criminal Police Office in Düsseldorf and the police force of the Rhineland-Palatinate. RTL journalist Roy Grotz was the only journalist at the time present inside the cultural center. He recalls that there were many psychologists roaming the building, as well as local volunteers who had just shown up in case help was needed. Nobody knew how long the ordeal would take. Matter of hours or days? When would the police and army finally intervene? Now, the interesting thing about this cultural center where Roy was, together with the parents of the affected children, is that the back courtyard had a direct line of sight with the top floors of the creche where the children and adults were held. This gave parents a sense of comfort and connection with their loved ones inside, only 300 to 400 meters away, Roy recalls. Any information or updates police and officials received was written on a big flip chart for parents to read in the middle of the room. Every now and then an official would come up to the flip chart, write up an update, and parents would huddle around anxiously, waiting for the message. Meanwhile, local residents in the street showed incredible support and solidarity, opening their houses to special police commandos who set up operations at the kitchen table. The whole community came together to try help save these children and their teachers. So who was this mysterious attacker? And what led him to take so many innocent people hostage? The kidnapper was the 39-year-old Neji Bejaoui. He was of Lebanese descent, who had been living in Luxembourg since 1982 and became a Luxembourger in that period after. A martial arts champion, he lived in Montagnac with his wife and two children, his son Nizar and daughter Samar. Bejaoui was a very troubled man. He was said to emotionally and physically abuse his wife and children, and because of this, his wife separated from him and obtained full custody of the children for mistreatment. Simultaneously, Bejaoui wasn't paying the creche bills of his children, and a year later, in 1994, the management of the Wasserbillig daycare excluded his son and daughter from the establishment for reasons of non-payment, and they were taken away by social services. Without his children and his wife, Bejaoui sank into a deep depression, taking antidepressants on a daily basis. Monitored by a psychiatrist, he had tried to reconnect with his wife, apparently unsuccessfully, living at her parents' home, who are also based in Montagnac. He was having a very difficult time with his situation. Residents of Wasserbillig would later go on to say that the 39-year-old gunman blamed the daycare center for the loss of custody of his two children after he and his wife had separated. Of course, they were acting as a protective shield for the children, and they may have, besides other close contacts, informed social services of the children's poor well-being and mistreatment at home. But that is their role. They are there to take care of the children and to alert authorities if there are unsafe situations in their homes. Now let's come back to the day of the hostage taking, the 31st of May of the year 2000. Bejaoui and the children and the carers had been inside the creche all afternoon. Around 5 p.m. that Wednesday, after initial contact with police negotiators and psychologists was established, the first release of a teacher and 8 children took place, followed around 2 hours later at 7 p.m. by the second round of another 8 children. So on that first evening alone, already a third of the children had been released, as well as one of the 5 teachers. Most likely, police officials were open to negotiating his demands upon the release of a first batch of children, especially the youngest ones. So what exactly were Bejaoui's demands? The attacker demanded a truck and a private plane for 8 a.m. the next morning to take him to Libya, as well as 6 million francs, around 1 million euros. It's not clear why he wanted to flee to Libya per se, but it would seem like the country may have not had an extradition agreement with Luxembourg and he would feel safe there. At first, Bejaoui requested a cargo Lux plane, which he then changed to a 15-seater Luxair jet. To reiterate his demands and make officials take him seriously, he fired 2 shots into the walls, however not injuring anyone. Furthermore, the kidnapper requested a live televised interview with RTL. The government agreed to these demands, the plane was put on standby at Findlay Airport, and a journalist team was readied for the live broadcast. While all of this was happening, Wasserbillig was thrown into the spotlight in Luxembourg and around the world. International reporters flocked to Luxembourg. The town was completely run over. Local reporters spoke to some of the affected parents. Luxembourger Wart's Rita Rupert spoke to Laurence and Abbess Kirsch, whose daughters Félicie and Ophelia were being held inside the creche. "I always thought this could never happen in Luxembourg," said the father. "Why us? Why our children? How could someone do something like this?" The fear and panic could be felt amongst the parents, the Kirsch family said. Especially when children were being released, happiness and relief sprung up in some, whilst a feeling of desperation and hopelessness grew in others. But there was hope. The next release could include my own child, they thought. Around 8:15 a.m. on the 1st of June, the Grand Ducal Police requisitioned equipment, materials and a car from RTL for a televised interview, according to Bejaoui's demands. But an hour later, a first attempt at an interview with the kidnapper failed, but it was followed by the release of 2 children. That morning, Bejoui made phone calls to the press and acquaintances, including RTL Radio. Shortly after noon, two more children were released. Behind the scenes, police were coming up with a plan. They saw the televised interview as an opportunity to catch the kidnapper. This was the first time Bejoui was stepping outside of the creche building and away from most of the children and teachers. The idea was as follows. Two officers would pose as the RTL journalists operating the camera and one being the interviewer. At 7:16 p.m. on Thursday, the 1st of June, Bejoui came out of the creche, holding a grenade in one hand and a child and a teacher in the other. Special forces were on alert. Snipers were on the roof, ready to take aim. But Bejoui's face was very close to the child and the grenade. Things could go terribly wrong. He stepped forward and began speaking to RTL journalists. But they were journalists in disguise. Everything unfolded in just a few seconds. The TV camera was in fact a disguised gun. The marksman, posing as the camera operator, was a trained policeman. And as Bejoui started talking, he fired two shots at close range at Bejoui's head. Bejoui fell backwards with the grenade and child still in both arms. Units rushed forward to rip the child away from him as a special bomb squad professional jumped on Bejoui should the grenade explode. But there was no explosion. The pin had never been removed. Immediately as the shots were fired, special units and emergency service personnel rushed into the daycare center and carried all the children safely out of the building. Staff were in tears, but safe. Children could reunite with their parents. "We had to get them out seriously fast," said Jos Schumer, an emergency worker who was among the first to race into the building to rescue the children. "He'd taken a can of petrol and poured it all around the room," firefighter Mark Levick said. "It was incredibly dangerous. We were standing by and were ready to go in at any second in case he lit it." At 7:20 p.m., all the hostages were released. The unfolding drama shocked the world as pictures of distraught parents and neighbors contrasted with the peaceful setting of this small town. Interior Minister Michel Wolter was saying that the interview situation provided police with a very lucky opportunity. "He didn't have a free hand to activate the grenade," Wolter said. One might presume that at point-blank range, Bejoui was killed immediately from his head injury, but he in fact survived. He was critically injured and hospitalized. After 28 hours, the attack came to an end. No lives were lost. Curiously, many children did not perceive the danger of what they experienced. They were only afraid when the kidnapper threatened to throw a child out the window at some point. Once they returned home, they continued playing. Life went on. "It was more like a movie in front of their own eyes," said Abbess Kirsch about their children. To soothe their worries, their father told them that he had thrown the bad man into the Moselle River and he would never return. This way, they could sleep safely. Now, there was a lot of debate surrounding the tactics used by Luxembourg's police in taking Bejoui down. Following the events, the New York Times reported that the world's largest journalists' organization had asked for an investigation of Luxembourg police tactics after the officers posed as a television crew and lured a gunman into an ambush to end a hostage crisis. "These are disturbing tactics," cautioned Aidan White, General Secretary of the Brussels-based International Federation of Journalists, which represents more than 450,000 journalists worldwide. He added, "Cameramen are always potential targets when filming in dangerous conditions. Incidents like this may put them at even more risk from trigger-happy criminals or security forces who may suspect their motives." Fred Brown, chairman of the Society for Professional Journalists Ethics Committee, said the case just adds to the sense that journalists are not always what or who they appear to be. The Luxembourg police, however, defended their strategy, saying it minimized the threat to the hostages and led to their release unharmed. At least one journalism professor, Nicolas Danilov of Northeastern University, agreed. This was a question of saving lives, he said. You can argue that the results justified what was done. In the end, truthfully, no one was hurt. Another controversial issue was that apparently Jean-Claude Juncker, also thrown into the spotlight with international media around him in this crisis situation, was in direct contact with the kidnapper and even leading some of the negotiations. However, it was still the police, which was in direct contact predominantly, Mark Gerges of the Letzebuer Land said. He added, "Action on the ground is the domain of special units, which is one of their raison d'être. Whatever the reason that led Juncker to enter into direct contact with Bejaoui and make him promises, the kidnapper who is arrested by the Prime Minister, this attitude is simply irresponsible," he said in his opinion piece. Bejaoui faced a number of charges, including suppression of individual freedom, extortion, deliberate injury to others, not respecting the law on arms, and the triple rape of one teacher. Indeed, he had severely raped one educator while all of this was unfolding. His trial before a judicial panel was held in October of 2001. A psychiatrist who examined him in prison described Bejaoui as a depressive paranoiac, saying he had developed a hatred for the justice system and society because of perceived injustices, a reference to Bejaoui's losing custody of his children many years earlier. On forums online, users commented that they knew Bejaoui personally. Some saw him regularly at brawls and cafes, and according to a reader, he chased his wife through the village with a knife in front of everyone, regularly beat his wife and children, and deprived his kids of food, causing him, of course, to lose custody. French newspaper Le Parisien had a big exclusive interview with the son of the kidnapper. The father had confided in some friends of his son, Nizar, who was 13 at the time. He told us he wanted revenge because he had been deprived of his children. "It made us laugh," remembers Nono, one of Nizar's playmates. Nizar was even more specific. "My father had been planning this madness for a year, but he wouldn't have hurt the children. Never." This idle father had never managed to find long-term work. He said he wanted to be a bodyguard, but he never pursued it, recalls one of his neighbors. Bejaoui's repeated failures had left a deep mark on this unpredictable man, whose angry outbursts were feared by his close loved ones. The man who had usually advised his son on the soccer field without raising his voice was now a shadow of his former self. He was a black belt in Taekwondo. He normally knew how to control himself. But there, something was broken in him, and when he got angry, "we didn't stick around," summed up a friend of Bejaoui's son. Neji Bejaoui was sentenced to 22 years in prison, with the possibility of 4 years parole if he undergoes a program of psychiatric treatment. Judge Prosper Klein also ordered Bejaoui to pay thousands of euros to families and workers at the daycare center. Bejaoui was released in 2016. The victims of the hostage taking were informed about his release in advance. In a recent Luxembourg Award interview with Jennifer Capras, one of the children held at the hostage taking at the time, now of course an adult, she said, "Knowing that he was released was not easy for us. It was hard. Some families could not cope with this news. We have experienced traumatic things, and it is hard to fathom that he has been given so much understanding." According to justice officials, Bejaoui resides in Luxembourg to this day. And also the Spatzennacht still exists today.